Transfer complete.
So, are we recording?
Let me check. Are we doing subspace transmissions today?
Oh, yeah, I guess we are. I guess I'll kick it off. Okay.
Okay.
Hello. Welcome to Subspace Transmissions. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge.
What, is that my? Is that?
Oh yeah, you're supposed to say your name here.
Oh, this is Tyler Orton. Man, I usually have like something funny that I say like after introducing myself.
Well, it's about awkward moments, I guess. So.
Oh, okay. This
might work.
Tyler Orton planning a date with Leah Brahms.
That's amazing. So, Tyler, what's this week's conundrum?
I thought I usually ask you what the conundrums are.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
This is awkward.
Cam, what's this week's conundrum?
Most awkward moments.
Oh, okay.
This is part one, right?
Part one. Okay.
Oh, okay,
Cam, you and I were doing research for Star Trek's Most Awkward Moments. Can't believe we've not done this one. We've been doing the podcast, 3 years, about 150 episodes at this point. And how did we never do Most Awkward Moments?
I don't know, because I was thinking about that on the way over here tonight, because we've done episodes like WTF,
yeah,
Best Worst, Guilty Pleasures. Like, those types of episodes are really fun. And I'm always trying to think of other offshoots of that sort of idea that could make really like fun, goofy episodes of the podcast to kind of mix it up with the more serious stuff. Why did this one never pop into either of our heads?
Okay, here's the inspiration for it. You and I, we both follow this podcast that's all about the reality TV series Survivor.
Right.
And they had an episode about most awkward moments at reunion episodes where all the contestants gather after they've announced the winner. And that was a fascinating episode to listen to. So I was like, Cam, I think we can just rip off somebody else's great idea and do it with regards to Star Trek. And then an awkward moment ensued, and you asked me, what, you mean awkward moments on the podcast?
No, because you texted me the idea, and I thought, wait, what, does he mean, like, on the podcast? Yeah, exactly, like, clips of us, like, screwing up on the podcast?
Which there are a lot of.
There are.
Yeah. So, anyways, we did, like, barely any research, and we came up with, like what, 15, 20 each?
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, man, we're not going to have enough time. We also know that you listeners are going to have a lot of ideas that you want to send us. So this is just going to be part one. There might be a part two or part three down the road. But, guys, there's so much to tackle. But, Kim, we should first define what an awkward moment is here. I would say a moment that's you sit there and you have some sort of emotional reaction that makes you kind of want to crawl out of your skin. But it's not like an icky thing like Gul Dukat calling Kira late at night on a view screen to let her know that his old comfort woman was in fact Kira's mother.
Right.
Like, that's a really like dark,
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
But it's awful.
Yeah, but it's not like the kind of like this is awkward in a way that
has comedic value.
Some sort of value. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's like these moments either made me cringe, or they made someone on the show cringe in a comedic way. I think that's the way I looked at it.
I agree. And can I just dive into it? Because I need to tackle this one. Okay.
Swing away, Meryl.
Here's number one.
Is there something wrong with that?
No, actually, I... what are you having?
Tracheal and ale.
Good choice. I'll have one, too. My grandfather was Canadian, you know.
Really?
Aren't you one, too?
A grandfather?
No, Canadian, sir. Canadian.
No, I grew up in Alaska.
Oh, well, they both get a lot of snow. It was good talking to you, sir.
Yeah.
Your ale, Ensign.
Okay, this is Sam Lavelle and Commander Riker trying to have a drink together in Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Where it's pretty much the ensign trying to kiss ass to the big commander, trying to make awkward small talk, saying, my grandfather's Canadian. And Riker just shrugging his shoulders, like, what does that have to do with me?
This is a great moment in a great episode.
Yeah.
Lower Decks doesn't get enough like praise as it really deserves, because I think it's a fantastic episode. But yes, this is an amazing moment. And I love it whenever we can see Starfleet members dealing with people who are kind of outside the elite.
Yes. You know, the people that are still learning their way around the bridge, so to speak.
Like, can you imagine being new on the job and having your boss or your superiors being like Riker and Picard?
I would not have the guts that Sam did to go ahead and make that kind of awkward small talk
how
with
many years,
Commander Riker.
How many years on the job before you like approach them for conversation?
Drop the Canadian bomb?
Yeah.
I'd have to at least make sure that Riker is fully aware of my name and my duties. If I'm an ensign, I think it has to be what, like the full grade lieutenants that are at least having conversations or at least like performance reviews about their subordinates with Riker. I'd have to wait until I'm a full grade lieutenant. That's probably going to be, what, 4 or 5 years on the ship, right?
I would think so.
What do you think, 4 or 5 years of avoiding Riker, running away whenever you see him, would that be enough for you to avoid an awkward moment like this, Cam?
I feel like I would just say hi to Riker a lot.
Yeah.
I'd be like, hey, how are you today? Good. Well, see you later.
Hello, sir.
Yeah.
I'd just go, sir, and nod my head and walk.
Right.
Yeah. That's all I need to do. I don't need to ask him what he's drinking, and I don't need to talk to him about what's it like being a Canadian.
Well, in this scene, you see how that could go horribly awry. I mean, it is funny when you see these characters who are in lower ranks dealing with these characters, and it so often is awkward because we see it also again with Loser Picard in Tapestry.
Right.
It's brutal to watch.
So to me, this is there's two kinds of awkwards. It's the awkward where characters feel uncomfortable experiencing this.
Yeah.
And also there's the awkward where I feel uncomfortable watching it for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
This falls into both categories here.
It does.
Because I feel bad for Sam, and I'm also like, Sam, that's so misguided. What are you doing? You should know better. Your friends, your fellow Lower Decks, they should have told you better. Was he relying way too much on that waiter that is buddies with Riker?
Yeah. Do you think this guy goes anywhere in his career?
Sam?
Yeah.
Or the waiter in Ten Forward?
Oh, the waiter, of course.
Yeah. Sam, I think Sam's maybe the guy who didn't make it off Viridian 3 in Star Trek Generations.
Oh,
you know,
okay. Yeah.
You can thank Troy for that.
Right.
I don't know. We've never heard any follow-up to one Sam Lavelle.
No. I always thought that was a bit of a missed opportunity. And do you think if Lower Decks had fallen earlier in the TNG series, we would have seen maybe these characters recur more?
I would certainly hope so. I mean, they like Cito Jaxa enough, introduced a few seasons earlier, and they did bring her back. So, yeah, maybe Sam was at the Academy with Wesley at the same time there, and we just did not get to see him making even more awkward small talk with the upperclassmen.
Hanging out with Nick Locarno?
Yeah. Or maybe he failed a couple classes, had to go back and hang out with Nog when Nog went to the Academy a few years later. Should we be grading these awkward moments on a scale of 1 to 10 on Warp?
Yeah, maybe we should.
Okay, so as far as awkward moments go, I would say this is a solid 8 for me. 10 being the most awkward possible.
I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
It doesn't make me crawl out of my skin. There are some on my list that made me very uncomfortable to sit through.
Okay.
So I think this one is, it's solid in that it works really well for the characters, but I think for me to get a 9 or a 10, it's got to work for both the characters and for me.
See, this works for me on the levels where it's awkward for me as the viewer to watch, and it's also awkward for the characters to experience.
Right.
And so I'm just okay, double whammy there.
Right.
So.
I find it more amusing, though, than uncomfortable.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I do.
I found the whole thing very, almost because I've made the awkward small talk before where you bring up something that has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
And you just sit there. And the person can just, all they can do is really shrug their shoulders back. And
oh, the cut scenes from this podcast.
Pretty much, yeah. Cameron, what's okay. First on your list here, sir?
Well, I figure I'll just start with an original series episode. This is an episode fraught with awkward moments, and I found it kind of tough to narrow them down. But this is an episode called Charlie X.
Oh, yeah.
Where we see 17-year-old Charlie Evans brought to the Enterprise after being raised by aliens since he was 3.
Are you a girl? Is that a girl?
That's a girl.
I don't even know where you would start narrowing
down the
awkward moments here.
So when I see Charlie X, what is the awkward moment that jumps out to you?
Okay, I think the booty slapping, that's something that jumps out to me.
Okay.
The half-naked wrestling
right.
is awkward. And every single time he makes that facial expression when he's using his superpowers.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I went into this episode because I rewatched the whole episode because I just knew it was such a treasure mine of awkward moments. Going in, to me, it was all about the wrestling sequence where Kirk tries to, tame this wild man's, you know, out of control sexuality by wrestling with him in the gym.
I've never met Kirk. What are you talking about? Oh, sorry. Charlie X. Gotcha.
And so, like, to me, that was the moment I was going in for. I think there's a worse moment, though. I mean, like, okay. The ones you referenced are for sure there. You know, him slapping Yeoman Rand on the butt. Oh, boy. There's no right way to hit a woman, according to Kirk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad that you followed up put that in context.
According to Kirk.
Yes.
Yes. But there is a moment later in the episode where he approaches Yeoman Rand to profess his love for her. This scene... I couldn't even look at the TV. I kept having to look away.
Did you relate to it too much?
It's like, oh my God, it's like every online dating conversation I've ever had. No, but he says, you smell like a girl. And then he goes on to say, if I had the whole universe, I'd give it to you. When I see you, I feel like I'm hungry all over. Hungry. Do you know how that feels?
Hungry like a wolf? Yeah.
Yeah. This is awful. Like, this is unbearable to watch. And, you know, I think crucial to why the episode works is Yeoman Rand thinks it's uncomfortable, too.
Yeah,
like,
no
all
kidding.
The characters are like, man, this kid's a creep.
Do you think Charlie X ever gets out of an awkward period in his life? Or is this...
Well, he gets taken back to the alien by the aliens.
Well, exactly.
So I don't know. He maybe spends the rest of his life there.
I think he's stuck perpetually being an awkward human being.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I guess maybe he never deals with humans ever again.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about this episode and very entertaining is the fact that Kirk wants nothing to do with this kid. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so clear throughout that Kirk is just like, he's weird and I don't want to deal with him. Hey, Yeoman Rand, you look after him. Hey, McCoy, can you look after him?
Yeah.
That's what makes it great. But the wrestling scene, as you said before, also comedic gold. And Shatner... You know, Shatner is not phoning this episode in. He is committed to his scenes with this little brat.
Wasn't this the first one? Was it the first one aired or the first one filmed?
No, the first filmed was Corbomite Maneuver. This was second aired.
Oh, right, because Mantrap was first aired.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
This was second aired, yeah.
But this was early on, and Shatner's trying to prove that he's the right man for the job. He's no Jeffrey Hunter.
I'd be fascinated to know what he thought reading this script.
It's like, they want me to do what?
Now, the kid who played Charlie X... Was this a no-win scenario?
Yeah, I don't know. Look, if you're given like dialogue like that, what are you really supposed to do with it?
Yeah.
So, okay.
He nails it.
Where do you put it on the warp scale, Cam?
This has got to be a 10.
Is it trans warp?
I think so.
Okay.
Because just the sheer number of them. You give him one moment, I might let him go with an 8 or a 9, but he's got multiple moments.
Okay. You know, I'm going to skip ahead for mine because it's kind of in the same category
right.
that you went with.
Okay.
Now, Jake, what can I do for you?
I need some advice. You see, there's this older woman, and I think we're perfect for each other.
Ah, and she doesn't.
I don't know what she thinks.
Well, Jake, my advice to you is to tell Marta how you feel. That way you'll know.
Marta and I broke up.
You broke up? Well, then who?
You.
Me.
I love you, Nerys. Want to go out with me?
Cameron, this is from the episode, season 3 of Deep Space Nine, Fascination, where Jake Sisko professes his undying love to Kira Nerys. What sold it to me in an episode filled with nothing but awkward moments were essentially subconscious attraction bubbling to the surface here throughout it, because you can thank one Loxana Troi for her xanthium fever.
Comedic menopause, yes.
Yeah, comedic menopause. It was actually Siroc Lofton's line delivery here where he's like, wanna go out? Like, that's me. And plus, that's, you know, tempered with the profession of love as well, which I looked at it and I felt much like Kira did, where I need to get out of here as soon as possible. How would you react if a much, much younger individual professed their love and asked you out? Very straightforward.
Well, I would be very nice, but yeah, you just kind of have to give them like a very like, no, you know, I just don't think that I'm the one for you.
What if it's the daughter of your boss?
Oh boy.
And your emissary.
And my emissary. Yeah. I think you're extra nice then.
It's you're like, oh, how do I handle this situation?
Do you talk to their parent?
I think you'd have to just to indemnify yourself in case anything, if they claimed anything or I don't know, it'd be a very sticky situation here. But to me, watching Jake, I was like, this is Jake's 15 at this point.
Yeah.
It's the awkward 15-year-old attitude where like you suddenly fall in love with like a person that's really just a crush.
Right.
And you're like, I love you. It's just like, oh, dear Jake, there'll be other women. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. This moment, and to be fair, all the characters have awkward moments in this episode. So it's not like Jake's the showcase awkward moment. But he's the most fun, I think, to watch. And I think Sir Rock Lofton's actually really good in this scene. Like, he really...
He seems like a teenager who's legit professing his love in an awkward way.
Yeah, like, how do you compare him versus Charlie in Charlie X?
Well, I think Charlie X is infinitely more awkward.
Yeah. And somewhat threatening.
Well, he's got superpowers.
Yeah, whereas, like, Jake, it's more of a precocious... Like, there's a sweetness to it, I think.
Jake's lead up where, like, I need some advice. I have a thing for an older woman.
It's just Jake's like, got good taste.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think Kira's flattered that she's considered an older woman now?
Well, she is older than him.
Okay.
I mean, she could be, like, 21 and she'd be an older woman.
Fair enough.
So okay. I don't think that's insulting. Maybe if Jake had been, like, 35, she'd be like, well, you know.
Played by Tony Todd.
If Tony Todd from The Visitor came by and was like, I'm in love with an older woman, she might be like, yeah, really?
Yeah, and he's wearing the old man's prosthetics. I think she'd be very offended.
My father always said I needed the love of an older woman.
All right, on a warp scale, I put it as a warp 5.
Okay, a warp 5. Yeah. I would say I think I agree with that.
Warp 5?
Because to me, there's like, it's like cute. It's a cute moment for the character, and I don't think... It doesn't make my skin crawl.
When we do part 2 of Awkward Moments, Cam, there's, believe me, a whole treasure trove of things in Fascination that I'm going to be diving into as well.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that.
Cam, next pick, sir.
Let's go to Voyager. This is one that's maybe a little bit... Like, I tried to pick ones that maybe weren't as obvious, because some of these, you know, we're rightfully going to hit that are obvious, big, you know, fan-favorite awkward moments. But there is one then Voyager that drove me insane and I actually think is unbearable to watch. And this is in the episode Pathfinder, where the episode opens with Barclay having like a hangout session with Troy in his apartment or house or whatever it is, condominium.
Condo, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
He's got quite the view.
He does.
Yeah.
That's the future, man.
Apparently in the future, everybody has a view of the San Francisco skyline.
Right.
No matter where you live.
Is everything all right, Reg?
Of course. Why wouldn't it be?
To be honest, you seem a little on edge.
Do I? Oh, it's just that I'm excited to see you.
I'm excited to see you, too. I think Geordi's a little disappointed I didn't invite him to come along.
Yes, I was hoping to get together with him, too, before the Enterprise leaves orbit, but I just wanted to spend some time with you first. That's all right, isn't it?
Of course it is. I hear you've been working on the Pathfinder project.
Now, this scene is, like, innocuous in terms of its conception and probably writing, but in execution... Now, Tyler, you know, I think I've talked about it before in this podcast. How did it jump out to you?
It Barclay has no life at all.
Yeah.
Like, it cries of desperation, where this is not a... We always know that there's something a little off with Barclay, though.
Yes.
But this is somebody who I don't know how he ever made a pass through the psych exams and the academy. How did he even graduate from the academy without constant, just like, I don't know, like anxiety attacks or what have you? But essentially, he's saying that ever since Enterprise, he has no family. He's got nobody in his life at all.
Right.
And Troy's trying to comfort him.
Yeah. And this scene to me is so brutal. I it really makes me uncomfortable because... It's the most awkward conversation. It's stilted. There's these long, weird pauses. It's, and you know, he's like, got a cat that's like eating ice cream he gave to her. It's just, it's, I don't even know that it's.
It looks like he should be like a shut-in or something.
Yeah. And the scene to me plays like in a horror movie. This could have led to like a murder.
See, this to me, it would have been better had, I think the writers acknowledged the fact that Reg has far more severe mental health issues than I think the show ever lets on.
TNG doesn't feel like it's this bad. No. I think Voyager amps it up.
Yeah. And look, he's seeking counseling.
Right.
I just don't, okay. I think the reason why this sticks out, like, if it was a character on, like, some other series, like some other television universe, you'd be like, okay, well, the guy's seeking counseling. Good thing, you know, his job secure. This is a member of Starfleet, which they're supposed to be the best of the best, and I don't think he's ever followed through with a constant stream of mental health services. So it's just this guy who's never been able to get well adjusted, and I don't know how he was able to hold on to his career, essentially.
Yeah, like, it kind of is surprising that in the future there wouldn't be some sort of even treatment to lower his anxiety.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nowadays there are pills that do help. Or, you know, there's a lot more coping mechanisms for people with anxiety problems. Why in the 24th century is this guy, like, unable to even practically be in a room with someone?
He's essentially just transferring his own issues onto, like, another little project here. And I don't think it's healthy for him.
No.
So.
No, but did you find the scene as unbearable as I did?
Yeah, it's certainly skin crawling. Like, yes. I was just like, okay.
And they do another scene like that, like later down the road in the episode Inside Man on the Beach, that right. is just as uncomfortable. So it's like Voyager really doubled down on uncomfortable Barclay.
Hey, that's the only uncomfortable Barclay that we really know, is it not? So, Cam, where would you put this on Warp Factor what?
To me, this is a 10. This scene is just, like, to me, I couldn't even watch it. I kept, like, shifting in my seat. This may be, for me, the most unsettling scene in Star Trek history.
Well, more so than Wrongs Darker Than Death and Night with Maru Nerys being dragged away from her crying children to be used as a comfort woman by Gul Dukat.
They're in different categories. Okay. This moment, though, for me, just, like, made me cringe so badly.
Okay, Warp Factor 10.
Yes.
Right, you've hit Trans Warp twice so far.
I have. Well, you know, I'm starting strong. It's all downhill from
okay,
here.
Okay, okay. I would give this a solid 7. Like, it's...
Really?
Yeah, okay. I'm just like, yeah, that's awkward.
Could you imagine being in that room?
As, say, Troy?
Yes.
Troy must be a saint.
I couldn't make it. I would have to leave.
She's been dealing with this gentleman who's been having very similar recurring issues that he doesn't seem to quite address in the way that needs to be. For what, like 10 years?
Yes, including creating fantasy versions of her.
Yeah. Which she initially defended until she saw the fantasy version
yes.
of her.
In Hollow Pursuits, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, uncomfortable. Okay. What's your next one?
Well, you know, why don't we stay on the Barclay train? There's a lot of awkwardness here, yeah. But it's not exactly a scene where it's Barclay's fault that it becomes awkward.
Will your investigation affect our available power during the mission?
No. No, sir. We'll have to shut off some systems. We'll shut them down a few at a time. It shouldn't. I don't think so.
Good. I look forward to your report, Mr. Broccoli.
So what do you think about Picard calling Barclay Mr. Broccoli? That is, to me, it's awkward in that, like, Picard feels incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Everybody standing around him feels incredibly uncomfortable. Have we ever seen Picard so fallible than in this situation here?
Well, you know...
And you feel bad for Barclay as well, because Barclay knows that he's the biggest joke on the entire ship.
Picard does have a history of being socially awkward. It's like the one... real flaw of the character, I suppose, because on the job he's pretty perfect, but yeah, in his personal life he is more socially awkward, and so this does, what I like about this moment is it does ring true to the character of Picard. It's not just like a cheap joke at Barclay's expense, and I also believe that Picard doesn't know the names of people around him.
No, I believe that.
He knows Will. He's got Will down, Deanna, etc. But
no, he's initially calling him Dill. It's just all, you know, some sort of like vegetation. And
yeah, saying. He's calling Worf Woof forever.
Woof, yeah, Mr. Woof.
Yeah.
I felt bad for everybody in this particular scene. It made my skin crawl. And it was meant to do that. It was also meant to do that for the people within the scene as well.
This kind of echoes back to that the one you opened with Lower Decks. It's a character misspeaking, essentially, and then characters kind of reacting to it.
I like how so far we're on kind of different. We're choosing similar things for our own things, and then like I'm liking the extremely socially awkward stuff where like you're looking at the stuff that's like gut wrenching, like want to like crawl out of your skin and turn it inside out to a certain degree. Yeah,
I'm sure there's audience members on both sides of the divide, so we're speaking to both halves. But no, this is a great scene, and it's so funny. And
But it sends Barkley on a downward spiral just after this, though. You think he's making progress, and then the captain calls him Mr. Broccoli, the name that everybody's calling him behind his back that he kind of knows about.
This goes back to what you said, though. Like, why is Barkley on this crew if this sort of thing sends him into a downward spiral?
Yeah.
It just shows that, like, this is a guy who's just not able to be in, like, social group environments. Like, he's probably would be far better working on his own.
The thing that sells the scene to me, though, is how uncomfortable Picard is.
Yeah.
Like, I have you seen Picard? Okay. We've seen him uncomfortable, say, around children or, you know.
I don't know what you're talking about. He loves the children. I saw Star Trek Generations.
That's true. On his carousel.
Yeah.
But he hasn't ever, like, made such an ass out of himself as he does here, which is just fascinating to watch. I gave this warp factor 8.
I give it a 6.
A 6, really?
Yeah, to me, like, I don't know. Like, yes, I guess the ramifications for Barkley are fairly severe. But in terms of the moment, I kind of find it amusing. Like, it doesn't make me, you know, like, shift in my chair.
See, I think what the thread is like, for everything that you've viewed, you're viewing it from the outside.
Right.
Like, your reaction, I'm viewing it as like how the characters are kind of feeling here. To me, I'm obviously much more of an empath than you are, Cam. But
here's the question: like, do you think this moment sticks with Picard later in the day? Like, I don't even think he really thinks about it.
Probably not.
No, like, to me,
he's got his Earl Grey that he has to.
To me, you know, as an awkward Picard moment, I don't think this sticks with him.
Okay, but it sticks with Barkley.
Sure.
And same with how the Sam Lavelle scene sticks with Sam, whereas Riker, I don't think Riker really cares at all.
Don't you think a lot of moments stick with Barkley, though?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think almost every, like, just constant events throughout the day.
But the scene that you referenced just previously, it's not like that's an awkward scene for Barkley, though. He's professing.
It's a little awkward.
No, not for him. Like, he's professing, like, the issues that he's going through.
Right.
It's awkward for you to watch as a viewer.
Yes.
I think that's really
more
what,
so, definitely.
What's sending it to Transwarp for you.
Yes.
Okay.
I would say it's a little awkward for Troy.
Okay. Sir, what's next?
Okay, well, let's go to Enterprise. And, again, this is one that's, I think, more awkward for me than for anyone on the show.
Okay.
This is the Archer fantasy in A Night in Sick Bay. This is Archer, you know, this is not a good episode, man, but Porthos is, you know, of course, in the med bay, and Archer's having erotic dreams about T'Pol. And there's a fantasy sequence that I'd completely kind of forgotten about, and it opens with this fantasy train of, like, Hoshi putting decon gel on T'Pol, who's putting it on Archer, who's putting it on Porthos. And then at a certain point, Hoshi takes Porthos away, and it gets steamy.
Yeah,
and it's just like, and the whole time you hear voiceover from Phlox giving Archer advice about his love life.
Tell me, Captain, have you thought any more about why T'Pol's opinion is so important to you? How long has it been since you were intimate with the woman?
It is so uncomfortable to watch. I find it, like, awkward in terms of its staging, in terms of what this means for the character of Archer in his psyche.
So it's, again, like an execution issue more than anything else.
Yes.
Yeah, where it's just kind of like, I have a faint memory of this.
Yeah.
I think I've tried to, like, excise it from my own memory.
Sure,
about how,
don't blame you.
I just like how Enterprise tried so hard to be sexy.
Yeah.
And it was anything but. Was there any, like, sexy, like, legit sexy moments for you, Cam, where you really had to, like, I don't know, unbutton your collar to a certain degree and fan yourself?
In Enterprise?
Yeah.
Nothing that jumps to mind.
Yeah.
No. But to me, like, what's fascinating about this moment, and awkward, is what it says about Archer's fantasies.
It increases puppy.
Yeah, it includes like this like decon train.
Yeah.
And like and Porthos. Like, what the heck is going on here?
I really think the creators thought decon gel was far sexier to them than it was to any of the viewers.
Yeah.
Any.
Yes. Yeah. And it's and it makes me very awkward to watch. And I feel awkward for Archer, the
character. You're always awkward to watch. Don't worry about that.
That is true. So, I mean, on a scale, this is like, it's lower tier than, you know, the Charlie X one or what have you. But I'd give it like a 6 for what it says about Archer.
Yeah, very strange on his part.
Yes.
Okay, Cam. You know, why don't I go do a follow up with one about execution versus intense, where I just watched this and I feel as if we could have an entire episode of awkward Geordi moments.
Right.
But here's one where he has this follow-up line, and the director, editors, they wait a long beat for him to do this follow-up line. I'm building it up. Let me just play it for all you listeners there. But it is something to behold in how, like, huh, okay.
Ah, you have a practiced hand, Commander.
Yes, I have my father to thank.
Your father liked to cook?
No, he hated it. Why, he left the chore to me.
It is my understanding that in most human families, the woman shares in the cooking.
There were only the two of us. I never knew my mother. She died when I was very young.
Where did you get these eggs?
So Riker reveals to most of the senior staff that his mother died at a young age, and all Geordi can say is, where'd you get the eggs? He's cooking breakfast for the crew.
Which episode is this from?
Oh,
I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I'll have to follow up on that one. I'm blanking. This is, okay. But I felt like, geez, Geordi, like you can't say one human thing. You don't have like some sort of like 1 ounce of empathy. You know the people like in your life where you somebody says something very personal,
yeah,
and they kind of respond with huh.
What I love about this scene is that it does kind of expose the cracks of Roddenberry's utopia, where like people have reached a point of perfection where they can't even like have these sorts of conversations as like friends.
No, it's like, yeah, your mom died, man, whatever. Because like in Roddenberry's vision, it's like people don't care about death anymore. It doesn't hurt them.
But we've seen for the character of Riker, who's very stoic, like this would mean something for him to tell the group this.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't expect sensitivity from Geordi.
Yeah. But the other thing is even Will's a little awkward here, because Worf's just asking about breakfast customs and Will all of a sudden has to talk about his dead mother.
Yes.
Which Geordi follows up with. Eggs? Yeah, okay. Yeah. But even the direction, you just watched the clip, Cam. They spent a long time showing him cook those eggs.
Right, yes.
Like, I'm just
it's a real long long take there.
And I'm like, okay, we're going somewhere.
It's like Jonathan Frakes has been taking cooking lessons. He's like, guys, I really want to show these off for this episode. I've been like going method with this.
With eggs?
Yeah, with eggs.
Yeah, it's real difficult. Who's the schmuck who pays for cooking lessons and learns how to like scramble eggs?
Oh, I don't want to reveal anything about myself.
Okay. For me, this is a warp factor 9, and it's okay. Geordi all the way, where it's just like, what, dude, what is up with you? And then it's also a combination of that plus just the directing, the execution. It goes from the script, where like, what are they actually typing into the script that they're dealing with this sort of stuff? And then I don't recall who directed this one, but boy, I don't know what was with that long shot of Riker scrambling those eggs.
That's when you really need a visual. Like, people, please go look this up it's on YouTube?
It's on YouTube. We'll
post links on the blog.
Check it out on the blog.
Yeah, subspacepod.com.
Yeah, so we'll Cam, warp factor what for you?
That's about an 8 for me.
An 8,
It doesn't make my skin crawl the way some of the others do, but it's definitely, like, it hits harder than some of the others.
Yeah, I mean, they don't all have to be skin crawling moments.
That's how you get a 9 for me.
Okay.
Niner up.
But to me, it's just like, oh, that's awkward.
Yes, it's definitely awkward.
Okay.
Yeah, I put it on the high end of the non-skin crawling moments.
Fair enough. Cameron?
So I'm going to do another TNG one, and I've actually like prepared a little play for us for this one. This is about an episode we talked about back with Patrick Johnson, where we talked about the evolution of Q. And this is an early season 1 episode of TNG where we learn about the penalty box.
God.
And this goes back to execution as well, but it is very awkward for one particular character, Tasha Yar, who is put in this invisible penalty box field back on the Enterprise. She's beamed away from the planet the rest of the crew are on. And the following is a dialogue scene of the exact dialogue from the episode. And Tyler, you are going to play Picard, and I shall play Tasha Yar. So the scene is, we're on the Enterprise. Picard is in his chair, and he's confused. He can't communicate with the crew down on the ground. Suddenly, Tasha Yar appears in the background, standing still at her station.
Damn it, I can't even make a log entry.
I wish I could help you, Captain.
Where is everyone else?
Down on some planet.
Some planet? What are you doing here?
Well, I, it sounds strange, but I'm in a penalty box.
A penalty box?
Q's penalty box. It sounds strange, but it definitely isn't. I know that one more penalty, by anyone, and I'm gone.
Gone?
Yes, I am gone! It's so frustrating to be controlled like this.
Lieutenant, Tasha, it's all right.
What the hell am I doing? I'm crying?
Don't worry. There's a new ship standing order on the bridge. When one is in the penalty box, tears are permitted.
Captain. Oh, if you weren't a captain.
Yes.
Scene.
Go on.
No. We talked about this scene in that podcast episode. What the hell what
are they writing here?
Is this awkward?
But
it's awkward for not just the character of Tasha Yar, who's breaking down in front of her captain quite embarrassingly over a very vaguely written scenario that even she can't explain. But it's also awkward for the actors involved.
When it crescendos with Yar saying, if you weren't my captain, finish that thought, please, because I'm just intrigued by like what the writers really wanted us to think here.
Yeah, like what is the evolution of this conversation in their minds?
Do you think this was just written in a fever dream, like, or something like? I don't understand it at all. Is this good science fiction? Is this good dramatic writing?
Well, one of my favorite lines is her describing the penalty box, and she says, "It sounds strange, but it definitely isn't." Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, it's not strange,
but it definitely isn't.
I think it's strange.
Yeah,
like, and it sounds strange too.
But she's not even telling Picard what a penalty box is.
No, that's why I think like these scripts are probably just being written on the fly. Like,
yeah.
We watched Chaos on the Bridge, the documentary covering the early seasons of Next Generation. It was just like a total madhouse in there when that came to getting some sort of coherent writing from the staff at that point.
Right.
So, Cam, warp factor what for you?
I'm giving this one a 9.
A 9? Okay. I think this has to be like a warp factor 9. I feel bad for Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
Is
this her lowest moment in the series?
Well, she came... There's some other close moments, you mm-hmm. know.
Definitely.
This is the one that stands out to me most. And maybe it's because you and I have recently talked about it, but boy, oh boy.
It just feels like a perfect culmination of like humiliating material for the actress and for the character.
Yeah.
Because Tasha, as we see early on, is a very strong character. And to give her this moment is highly questionable.
I think there's a lot of questionable decisions made in early seasons of Next Generation. How long to cook the eggs?
I would have liked if the scene had featured Worf instead of Tasha. Okay, so what is your next entry?
You know what? I can't help but go back to Jake Sisko. You know, he's a young teenage guy. We have so many. It would be easy to just rely on, say, one Wesley Crusher for awkward teenage moments, but I feel for Jake in this situation. This is something where you're like, oh dear. Let's get to it.
Jake, you know, I've been thinking, after we're done eating, we could take the females to the Holo Suites. I borrowed one of my uncle's private programs. The Massacre on Ferris 6. We could spend an hour pillaging and looting the frightened townspeople.
I don't think so.
No one's asking you to think, my dear. Here, make yourself useful. Cut up my food for me.
You must be joking.
Cam, could you imagine going on a double date with Nog?
It looks pretty awful. Have you ever been on a bad double date? I don't
think
I have, no.
No, I choose them wisely.
Have you ever been on a double date?
Yeah.
Like in an early relationship, not like kind of later down the road?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. No, I remember One of our mutual friends and I, we went on a double date. It was a first date.
Right, okay.
It was incredibly awkward.
Was it?
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, we did not get second dates with those women.
Right.
I can tell you that much.
So, right, yeah, like I've never really had that experience.
I'll go back to this. He ends up on one side of the street waiting for a bus, and they end up on the other side of the street waiting for a bus, and they had to stare at each other for about 12 minutes just waiting for the bus.
Now, that's a warp factor 9.
Meanwhile, I drove off. I was just like, yeah, see ya, suckas. But that was about the most awkward double date that I've ever experienced. I would never bring a Ferengi with me on a double date. How did Jake not know that he was going to be put in such an awkward situation?
I was going to say, who's to blame for this scenario?
Right.
Because Jake has to know going in that Nog has very different values as a Ferengi.
But doesn't Nog have to know that non-Ferengi women have very different values as well?
Nog doesn't strike me as the most self-aware.
Yeah. Not at this point, certainly.
No, later on down the road, yes. But early on, he's a little bit... I can understand the Nog character. I think he's actually a very, very well-written young kid character. Like, everyone kind of knows that kid who's just kind of, like, really, like, hyper-minded and doesn't really, gained the ability to kind of see outside of themselves. And I think he's actually a really well-written example of that.
Yeah.
So do I think he's going to realize that? Nah, he probably doesn't care.
The date does culminate with him asking his date to chew his food for him.
Yeah.
I'm just like, Nog.
Well, that's the normal move, isn't it?
Is that why those awkward first dates end and never make it to date number two, Cam?
That's a sob story for another time.
Okay. I would give this a warp factor 6 for me. It's just like, Jake, I feel bad for him in this situation. For me, it doesn't... makes me worried that there's a few too many viewers laughing at what was going on and that, like, yeah, you go, Nog. I'm just like, guys, that's not what you were supposed to take away from this particular scene.
I don't know that that's the case. I think it really helps that the women... and Jake are uncomfortable. They're the three that are
They're calling them out. Yeah. Calling him out on like this kind of abhorrent behavior. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a case of like Jake backing Nog in this matter. Being like, hey, he's my friend. What's your problem? You know, like it's very clear who's the one in the wrong here. So I actually think it's a really good moment. On a warp factor, I would probably give it a 7, I think.
Oh, really?
I think so. Because I can actually put myself in this position and... You know, we all have friends who...
You're the Nog character in this position.
I'm not the Nog, but I've been the Jake. Not in dating situations, but in other social situations.
Yeah.
And it can be uncomfortable. So I can definitely sympathize with Jake's position here.
Sure.
So, okay, well, I'm going to do another TOS one that is, I think, interesting and maybe is different than most of the ones on this list because it is portrayed as an awkward moment, but I don't think its awkwardness translates to the audience. I don't know that we understand the moment in the way it's intended. This is a moment in the episode Shore Leave. It has nothing to do with the vacation planet or anything like that. It's a scene where Kirk is in the chair talking to Spock.
I know this scene.
And he's talking about his back hurting.
Yeah.
And then Tanya Barrows, I believe, goes up and starts giving him a massage. Now, Kirk is like, oh yeah, harder, harder. And then he realizes it's not Spock massaging his back. It's Tanya Barrows, and he gets really ornery, and she's like, oh, that's good, that's good. And then he just looks uncomfortable and annoyed.
Yeah.
Anything from the landing party?
They should be sending up a report momentarily, Captain.
Oh.
Something wrong?
A kink in my back. That's it. And a little higher, please. Push. Push hard. Dig it in there, Mr. Thank you, Yeoman. That's sufficient.
Now, the scene, the joke... that we are being shown is that Kirk is frustrated it's not Spock.
Yeah, yeah. It's
but I
Kirk
don't...
being tricked into thinking it's somebody else.
But what... I don't understand the scenario.
Yeah, where a colleague, not quite your equal, but your next closest confidant on the ship... is that a common thing at work? Like, Cam, your coworkers go up and really dig into your shoulders when you're sore?
No.
Never? Does that seem like a character trait of Kirk further down the road that he's demanding massages from, of all people, Spock?
And does Spock strike you as someone that's just doing involuntary massages?
Around giving massages to his commanding officer?
He ain't to Paul.
What
with the neuro pressure.
What on earth was Kirk actually thinking? Like,
that's what I don't understand about the scene. I don't know. It's like this weird moment that...
But it's weird on two different levels.
Yes.
Which, Yeah, I totally
maybe
agree.
Maybe three, because what is Tanya Barrows thinking?
Yeah, going up to your, would you ever go up to your boss and just hunker
take it
down?
On,
and,
take it onto myself and yeah, start massaging
just
my boss?
Lead the boss to a massage table and...
At most in that scenario...
Pour some oil on?
At most in this scenario, and this isn't something I would do, but you might say like, oh, would you like me to massage it? Like, I know how to do back massages. You might maybe make the offer...
Yeah,
I would never do it myself, but I can understand more versus just taking on to yourself to do it. Like, it's just a whole weird like triangle of characters behaving in ways that don't make sense to me.
Maybe the best comparison is as podcast co-hosts. How many unsolicited massages have we given each other throughout the course of this show?
That's why we had to get rid of Ben Young.
They just too
got,
many.
They got too uncomfortable.
They're piling up.
Kept interrupting the podcast.
Yeah. I would give this a warp factor. I'd say warp factor 7.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. It is interesting, though, just that TOS doesn't have a lot of moments like this where it just feels like they're missing the target of what they're supposed to be hitting. Like, it just feels like there's some sort of breakdown in communication between what the show wants and what the audience is supposed to take from it.
I wonder just whoever wrote it.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a common thing.
I think it was Theodore Sturgeon wrote this episode.
He gives or receives a lot of unsolicited massages, I guess. That's why it didn't seem weird to him.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Okay.
But it's fascinating nonetheless.
Oh, much like Fascination.
That's right.
The Deep Space Nine episode. Cam, why don't we jump into Voyager moments that we've talked about before. I just touched upon it briefly, but for viewers or listeners, I should say, this is something, it had been 20 years between episode viewings.
Mm-hmm.
I could see why I had erased this memory from my own brain, but here we go.
Have you ever been in love, Captain?
Your point...
Did your skin ever flush when you were near another person? Did your stomach ever feel like someone hollowed it out with a knife when you were apart? Did your throat ever swell when you realized it was over? Seven of nine told me love's like a disease. Well, maybe it is. Pheromones, endorphins, chemicals in our blood, changing our responses, physical discomfort, but any way you look at it, it's still love.
Karen, we should say for listeners, this scene literally starts in the ready room, carries onto the bridge. Chakotay gets out of his chair because it gets so awkward with the two of them, with Janeway and Kim fighting each other.
Yeah.
And then it carries on to her ready room where he exclaims, I'm in love. I don't need to go to a sick bay. Could you ever imagine having like this kind of conversation with your boss as well?
This is awful. For anyone that doesn't know, this is the episode The Disease from Voyager where Harry Kim is having this affair with this woman from another species. They're like a xenophobic species to a certain degree, right? And it sort of causes chaos on both ships. And oh boy, Harry Kim fighting for love is one of the most awful things to watch ever.
And so this, I think, is more up your alley in that it's not the characters seem uncomfortable; it's that the people watching it are. I don't know anybody who would watch this scene and not find it incredibly uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, especially like just the way that Harry Kim's dialogue is written is really embarrassing. It's not light years away from Charlie X's like proclamations of love.
Yeah.
Like, they feel just strange.
And this is a 27-year-old man at this point.
Yeah.
Could you ever imagine at age 27 talking like this to anybody?
Let me just do some quick flashbacks to my own, to when I was 27. No, I can't. It's really uncomfortable. And I feel kind of bad for the actor for having to spout this.
Yeah, what is he really supposed to do with this kind of dialogue?
There's nothing you can do. I mean, I do like this episode and what it does for the relationship between Janeway and Harry Kim, and that it at least implies there's been some growth with Harry Kim. I don't know if the show really ever acknowledges that going forward.
He never gets that lieutenant's pip.
No, yeah. But yeah, this scene, he just seems like really petulant and whiny.
Well, it seems like dialogue that maybe Wesley Crusher would
have. You just nailed it there, because that does seem like something you might have seen like the Dauphin, that season 2 episode where Wesley falls in love with like a furry animal creature. Like, or no, she was actually, I guess, sort of like,
she was in a very attractive female form.
She was like a star, like star jellyfish sort of thing.
Sort of
but
thing, yeah.
She turned into like a furry creature and then turned into a young girl. Yeah. But yeah, it's that sort of dialogue you would see in an episode like that, and it's really unbearable to watch. Didn't we talk about this episode, and was it Best Worst 2 or something?
The disease?
Yeah.
I think so. It was fairly recently.
Yeah, we delve deeper into that episode if you want to hear us talk about it.
Yeah.
I'll post links on the blog, of course.
Warp factor what for you, sir?
Oh, boy, that's like... I can actually put myself in his shoes. And that, like, I think we all remember really stupid things we said, especially when we're younger than 27.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking, like, 19 or 20 or something like that. And there's, like, things I'll still cringe about to this day that I said, like, 16 years ago. And it's like, I'm sure everyone has forgotten it except me. But to me, it's like, oh, God. And I feel like this is a moment that Harry Kim will remember for the rest of his life.
Chakotay thinks it's so bad that he's even getting out of his chair to just stare at it.
Has Chakotay ever had a moment like this in his life?
I can imagine him.
You think so?
Yeah.
He didn't strike you as someone who's so boring that he would just be like,
Age 16, Chakotay.
When he was, like, fiery?
Yeah.
Before, like, the life had beaten him down.
Is that tattoo, man? So, yeah, warp factor...
That's like a 9, I think.
Oh, really? 9?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, in the moment I get it, it's like a heated discussion. But I think of the ramifications looking back on this moment.
Yeah.
I would be, if I'm Harry Kim, I'm embarrassed to be, like, even in the same room as Janeway for, like, weeks after.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I would be as well.
Props to Janeway for being a good sport, ultimately.
I'll give it a warp factor 7 myself, personally. But, Cam, your next pick here.
Okay, well, I feel like you can't do an episode called Awkward Moments and not hit a Picard one. Now, you hit one earlier with the broccoli scene, but I want to do one, too. And I kind of want to...
No, you can't.
I kind of wanted to fold a bunch of them under one umbrella. And that's his scenes with Loxana Troi. In which Loxana Troi is always hitting on him and accusing him of having erotic thoughts about her. Because we see the discomfort on Picard's face in all of these moments. You know, I think they start in Haven, but they continue into Manhunt.
Yes, podcast listeners, you can see all the looks of discomfort on his face right now.
Yeah. Captain, even Zelo never had such thoughts about me. You may energize... That was meant as a joke, Captain.
I was not amused.
I mean, what do you make of these sequences of Loxana Troi accusing Picard of these thoughts?
Well, it never makes my skin crawl.
But it makes Picard's skin crawl.
Yes, yeah. which is interesting in that, like, she's getting under his skin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to see. She's one of the few people that can actually, like, shake him.
Yes.
Which I'm always fascinated to see.
Do you think he is occasionally having thoughts about Loxana Troi?
No.
I can see it for that character.
Do you think... He's uncomfortable because he actually is having thoughts or because she's accusing him of having thoughts he's not having?
I mean, it works either way, but if you look at the character, he's very repressed, right? He's very, like, quiet and shy, whereas, like, Loxana is, like, this explosion of charisma. She's a very outgoing woman.
Yeah.
I can see Picard finding that attractive at some level, but also being very uncomfortable with the idea of actually meeting her on her level, like, putting himself out there for her. So, like, it would not surprise me an iota if he was having thoughts about her at all.
Okay.
In fact, to me, they you know, I think there's a scene in one of the episodes where, like, Deanna Troi just says, like, oh, she's just joking with you. That kind of sucks the ambiguity out of those scenes because, to me, like, I think part of the fun is that we should be guessing whether Loxana is telling the truth or not.
So, if you had to pick any one moment, though, from... their respective interactions.
Yeah.
What one stands out to you?
I think you have to take the Haven one because it's the first time it happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Picard looks pretty dopey carrying around her luggage as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Loxana is a recipe for awkwardness when it comes to Picard.
Okay.
But, yeah, so you don't think that Picard is in any way attracted to her?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I think she's such a narcissist, she just assumes every dude has the hots for her.
Right.
I that's what I truly believe.
No, that's, yeah, fair point.
Yeah. No, far point. No. Where are the apples? I told you the apples, man. All right. Cam, one more for me, and okay. I'll let you wrap up the show. But this is another one. I remember watching it, just myself as a viewer going, huh. All right. It's not an explosively awkward scene, mm-hmm. but it's one where you just kind of wonder about these characters and their priorities in life. So here we go. It's a Deep Space Nine clip from Extreme Measures.
She always said I liked you more than I liked her.
That's ridiculous. Right. Oh, maybe you do a bit more.
What? Are you crazy? She's my wife. I love her.
Of course you love her. She's your wife.
Yeah.
I'm just saying maybe you like me a bit more, that's all.
I do not.
You spent more time with me.
We worked together.
We had more in common.
Julian, you are beginning to annoy me.
What do you make of the Bashir O'Brien bromance, Cam?
This scene actually reminds me a bit of that episode of Seinfeld, the Not That There's Anything Wrong With It
episode,
where like Jerry and George are suddenly very uncomfortable around each other.
Yes.
That definitely reminds me of this moment where...
Here's the thing. I'm not going to say it's a loveless marriage between Keiko and the Chief, but they definitely enjoy being apart from one another.
Yeah.
I think Miles does like Julian more. Like, you know, to hang out with. He won't admit it, but the fact that they have to have this conversation, it's just very awkward, and it really makes you wonder about the whole Miles Keiko marriage even more. I'm just like, I don't know what the foundation is built on. Data apparently had a big part of it, but you know.
Well, when you look at the relationship between Miles and Bashir. It's founded in like having fun, joking around, recreation, like very positive things where you'd be like feeling good about yourself while you're out doing it.
Yeah.
There are very few scenes throughout DS9 where O'Brien and Keiko are having fun. It's usually like quarreling about things.
Or cleaning up debris from her exploded classroom.
Being tired.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff of that about how tired they are, or having like silent dinners. You never really get the sense that they're out having their own adventures. It's usually just like struggles and like problems in the marriage.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you're O'Brien, like, it makes complete sense that he would enjoy being with Bashir more.
Why doesn't he admit it? Is it because of that George and Jerry factor where he thinks there's something weird admitting that he genuinely enjoys spending time with Julian more so than his own wife?
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I think
even in the 24th century, he's has hang-ups like that.
Does O'Brien strike you as the most open-minded of types?
I know. I suppose not.
But I also think there is... he's a very like duty-bound guy.
Yeah.
And he would, I think, also in that moment recognize like his duty as a husband.
Sure, yeah.
And that saying this is breaking that. And so then he gets uncomfortable. So I think it works both ways.
What about... Julian taking a lot of huffs and puffs as he makes his case that they're best buddies. Like,
I mean, the huffs and puffs is a bit much.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
But I can also understand from the point of view of his character being like, what, I'm the fun one?
Yeah.
Really? Like, you're going to choose her over me? Because I'm sure, like, Bashir is the number one person who hears complaints about Keiko.
Yeah, do you kind of feel bad for Julian in that situation? Where it's like, if all you ever hear is, like, somebody complaining about their partner.
Yeah.
You're like, what can you really say? You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, I never, ever got the sense from the show that Bashir had any sort of negative opinions of Keiko.
Does Bashir and Keiko have any sort of relationship that we really see on screen?
Not really.
I can't even think of a scene that they've been in where they've spoken to each other.
Not even, I don't remember, but is there any scenes where, like, say O'Brien's in trouble? And they have a sequence like where Bashir talks to Keiko? Nothing jumps out to me off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Maybe
if so, maybe she was possessed by the Paw Wraiths or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Did O'Brien notice the difference when she was possessed by the Paw Wraiths?
Oh, Cam. Cam. I'm not going there. All right, sir. Warp factor. For me, I'd say that's another warp factor 5. It just makes me really question the priorities of a lot of these characters.
Yeah, but, for sure.
Anyways, your last one, sir.
Okay, well, I think we'll end with one that is a must hit, and that is the Geordi Galaxy's Child wanting to win over Leah Brahms and her discovering his holodeck program.
I called up a replay of the program file. I was all ready to compliment you again, Commander, for constructing a program which contained the prototype engine, so that you would always have a baseline reference for your modifications. And now I find that it's all about a fantasy plaything.
It's not like that. I swear.
I'm outraged by this. I have been invaded, violated. How dare you use me like this? How far did it go, anyway? Was it good for you?
Nothing like that happened. It was a professional collaboration.
Oh, I can tell. Every time you're touching the engine, you're touching me, real professional.
Okay, because I was actually going back and forth between if I was going to do this Geordi episode.
Yeah.
And if I was, there's two big scenes in here that I found incredibly awkward. You went with the discovery of the holodeck program.
I went with the one that I think everyone remembers.
Okay.
Like, to me, there's the scene where like he's like berating her in the Jeffries tube is unbearable to watch. But also the scene where he's like, or when he invites her over for dinner. Like, there's like a trifecta of just brutally awkward moments. But I think her discovering his hologram program is the one that people remember and the one that would be generally held up as the, you know, the most awkward moment of the episode.
I can totally get behind that. But, oh boy, like, watching Geordi literally run from main engineering to holodeck 3.
Yeah.
And just the look of horror on his face when Leah Brahms is talking about, the holographic Leah Brahms is like, yeah, these engines, you can just remember you're always close to me when you touch these engines. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, good God.
And then Leah Brahms is like, was it good for you?
I think she's totally in the right. And then Geordi keeps saying, it's not like that. What are you talking about? You made out with her.
He's,
like,
he's very defensive about it.
Yeah, but you know, dude, just own up to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, if that ever happened to you, how would you handle it versus Geordi? What would you say?
Oh, boy. I mean, I guess you have to just be like, you caught me. I'm sorry.
I'm a fiend.
Yeah, yeah. Or just be like, I didn't actually
There's
know you.
There's something wrong with
me. Yeah, I don't know. I'm really
no excuse.
I'm seeing the counselor 3 days a week now. Yeah. But I was curious because we talked.
I meant to delete it immediately afterwards. I don't know how it's still in the pro. Blame Reg Barkley.
We talked a lot about this episode in our episode Psychology of Geordi LaForge.
Yes.
So we really delve into it. And I think we do recreations of some of the dialogue from Galaxy's Child. What I want to actually ask you, though, which is something we didn't talk about before. How would you compare this sequence where she discovers this holodeck program to the one where they discover Barkley's program in Hollow Pursuits? Like, which do you think they're, you know, on equal footing awkwardness?
No, I think this is more, the Hollow Pursuits one is done more for laughs.
Yeah.
There's no laughs going on here.
But do you think there was intended to be laughs at this one?
No, I think this is intended to be uncomfortable to watch. Yeah. Intentionally uncomfortable than I think Star Trek usually aims for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you agree with that? Like, this is like an intentionally uncomfortable scene, and they, you know, more so than anything else that maybe we've talked about today.
I think so. Like, to me, it's just truly skin crawling.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that I think it happens to Geordi that makes it even worse, because Geordi is such a strange, aloof character that his response is not what almost any human being would have in this situation.
Yeah, he yells at her. He yells back at her. Like, she's yelling at him, so he starts yelling at her. It's like, dude, give this to her.
Can you imagine, like, Geordi LaForge on Twitter?
Is he just a Twitter troll?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
I think he would be pretty bad.
What about Tinder? What about Geordi on Tinder?
Oh.
Would he seem like one of those okay Tinder dates, and then when you meet up with them in person, you're like, oh, dear.
Do you think Geordi, though, would really meet people online dating? Or do you think he would be kind of just like, kind of, I don't know, put off by the whole thing? Like, I can see, like, Riker being the king of online dating.
Really?
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Riker is swiping right, like, on everyone just to see who clicks yes on him.
I totally see Geordi. Okay, if we go through all the characters, how do you
like
see
this.
Data doing on Tinder?
I feel like his messages would be very long and robotic.
They'd be like his poetry.
Yes.
You know, like Ode to Spot is an amazing piece of poetry.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like his communications with the prospective dates would be very just... don't think he would make it very far into the conversation.
It'd alienate way too many people.
Yes.
Okay. What about Bev, though? you know, like she's a single mother. It's hard sometimes to meet people if you've got like a child to take care of. I don't know, but if she's, look, she's a doctor.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
Yeah, Bev's got it going on.
Yeah, I think she would be very much in demand.
Bev would be swamped with messages.
Yes.
Swamped. Now, I think a lot of creeps would be going after her, too. But she's very, like, I don't think the show ever really, well, you know what? Ronan does kind of stand out. She generally...
Like her type?
Well, no, she generally has fairly good, I think, fairly good judgment. But the Ronan one does kind of throw it into question.
She was possessed, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I'll give her that.
Unless one, you know, if one of these dates possesses her somehow, maybe. But I don't think Bev's falling into the traps that many find themselves falling into.
Okay. What about Worf?
Oh man, Worf's not on there. Worf gets on there for like 2 minutes. He's like, I'm not doing this.
He's not even going to play the game.
Yeah, no way.
It's not honorable.
Yeah, no, not a chance.
Okay. What about good old JLP?
He's really good.
Is he?
I think Picard sends amazing messages.
Like very thoughtful.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Picard.
He's got a great physique. Sure. Like some ladies are really into the bald dudes.
Right.
You know, like I think, yeah, maybe he could be in high demand.
I think he would be an amazing conversationalist online.
Okay.
Now, when he meets them, that might be a little different. Although we've seen he seems to do okay.
But he might come off as a little stiff and pretentious to, like, at least on a first date. Like,
yes.
It'd take a while for him to open up. Maybe he'd need to bring his flute with him and play a few notes.
Right.
Hopefully that would work. So, yeah, we've already determined Riker would just be killing it. What about Deanna?
I don't know. I think she'd definitely get swamped with messages.
I think a lot of creeps would.
But she is a counselor, so I feel like she would be very quick to cross people off.
She's a really bad track record when it comes to men, though.
I know.
I don't think she has great instincts. She eventually lands a good one, you know, in terms of Will. But in between then, it's like, did she ever have a truly healthy relationship?
Yeah.
It may have been her prospective mate from Haven.
Right.
That may have been the best one there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert Kempner or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we figured Geordi would just be kind of inept, like.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Or what about Tasha Yar?
I think she'd be fine.
I'm putting you in the penalty box.
Yeah, but Tasha Yar is kind of tough. Like, I feel like she could handle a lot of the idiots on there.
Okay.
I think she would do fine. I think all the women would do fairly well. Troy, definitely, the judgment's a little off,
sure,
as we've seen. But you know, I think the real train wrecks are Geordi, Barclay, if he's on there, and maybe Data.
What about Wesley, though?
I think Wesley does fine. I think like 19-year-old Wesley, he does fine.
What is he messaging the women about, though? Do you want to get a Sunday?
How great Jean-Luc Picard is.
Okay. Probably. You wouldn't believe my mentor.
Yeah,
he's the
best.
Yeah.
I want to be just like him when I grow up.
I'm in Starfleet. Starfleet doesn't lie. I think you're beautiful.
But we saw, like, with Wesley and, like, the Dauphin and some of the other episodes, you know, he does fine.
The game?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Like, he's not weird.
Okay.
So.
Well, he ends up with the Traveler in the end, so I don't know.
No, that's true, I guess. Did he meet him online dating?
That's how the Traveler tracked him down, I think.
Tinder.
Yeah.
I'll travel to you.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Tyler, where are we?
Yeah, just go to facebook.com/subspacepod. Again, just type Subspace Transmissions in the Facebook search bar as well. We'll pop up. It just really asks if you like the show, just give us a like. It'll help us, you know, reach more people. The other thing is we're posting exclusive content on there. The more likes we get, the more content we're posting. We're also going to be picking up our activity when Star Trek Discovery premieres on Facebook. So you guys really do want to keep in touch with us through Facebook. That's the best method.
Okay. So what are we doing next week?
We are going to be doing a review of the 2-part episode Basics from Star Trek Voyager. It's been a while since I've seen this one. I'm actually kind of looking forward to how this one turned out.
You're a big fan of the Kazon.
Oh, they're my favorite Delta Quadrant alien by far, sir.
You've been pitching like a 3-part Kazon showcase podcast series for a long time.
In all fairness, never a big fan of the Kazon, but I think this might be when they're at their best. The episode Alliances, do you recall that one?
Yeah.
I think that may be where the Kazon's at their best. But
I look forward. I think in that episode, or in this next episode, we'll talk more about the Kazon and why they did or didn't work for the series. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay.
Okay, so you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in view from the penalty box, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nog and Jake go on a double date.
It rhymes. Nice. Okay, so until next time, Urena is closed.
Transfer complete.